Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama Daf Tzadi Aleph. We're holding on Tzadi Amad Beis, six lines from the bottom, Tanur Rabbanan at the two dots. The Gemara today on Amad Aleph is going to discuss whether we amdinan, whether we make assessments for nezek payments, or we only make such assessments for mita in the case of somebody who caused someone to die. And then on Amad Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss whether a person has a right to injure himself, whether for direct damage, whether for embarrassment, and the general concept of Baal Tashchis. So let's begin on Tzadi Amad Beis at the two dots, Tanur Rabbanan. Tanur Rabbanan, Shor Tam Shehemit V'Hizik, Danin Oto Dini Nefashos, V'Ein Danin Oto Dini Mamunas. The Brisa tells us that if you have a Shor Tam, a Shor that's unlikely to gore, which both killed and caused damage, we only judge the Shor for the Dini Nefashos, we only judge it for the damage that it caused through killing, and it's going to be put to death, but we don't judge it for dine mamunas. We don't judge it for monetary payments for the injuries that it caused. And mu'ad shehemit v'hizik, if you have a shor which is likely to gore, that killed and also injured, then the din is different. Danin oto dine mamunas, b'chozrin v'danin oto dine nefashos. We first adjudicate the case of monetary payment for the injuries that it caused, and then we would go back and adjudicate the case for the death that it caused and presumably put it to death. Now, kadmu v'danuhu dine nefashos, but the din by a shor mu'ad is, even though we're allowed to judge it for monetary payments and then to go back and judge it for death payments, if they went ahead and judged it for death payments first, then we would not go back and judge it for monetary payments. So ask the Gemara, v'chi kadmu v'danu dine nefashos, my havi. I don't understand. If you're allowed to judge the shor for monetary payments and then to go back and judge it for death payments, then when you went ahead and judged it for death payments first, why does that make a difference? Why should you then not be able to judge it for monetary payments? Lehader v'lidaine nami mamunos. Why don't we go back after we adjudicated the case of death payments and adjudicate a case of monetary payments also? It shouldn't make a difference. If you're allowed to do both for a shor mu'ad, then why does it matter if you accidentally went out of order? So Amar Rava, Ashkachtinu l'Rabbanan de'Bei Rav, de'Yasi de'Kamri. Rava says, I found the Rabbanan in the house of Rav or in the Beis Medrash, who were sitting and saying that Hamani Rabbi Shimon atimnihi, Damar ma egrov miyuchad shemasur le'eda ule'edim. The Rabbanan in the Beis Medrash said that this Brisa, which assumed that if you went ahead and adjudicated the death payments of a shor mu'ad, you would not go back and adjudicate the monetary payments of the shor mu'ad. That was according with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon atimni, which we saw a little bit on yesterday's daf, who assumes that ma'egrof, when it comes to like a fist that's used for damaging, it has to be designated, it has to be able for assessment by the Eda, by the people, and by the Edim. And the Gemara concludes, based on Rabbi Shimon's position, that alma be'inun umdina de'beidina, that according to Rabbi Shimon Atimni, we would need an assessment made by Beis Din to figure out if the strike that a person used to injure another person really has the ability to kill him or to injure him at all. But we would need to make an assessment. V'hakevan de'gamardina le'katala, lo mashinan le le'umdina de'beidina, ve'lo me'aninan le'dine. And in the case of a shor mu'ad, since we've already adjudicated the death payment, the death penalty for the shor, we've already adjudicated the case of the death that the shor caused, then we're no longer going to keep around the shor and be me'anin l'dine. There's an issue of like delaying the judgment for a person, for an ox. We don't want to leave cases floating around in Beis Din. So since we've already adjudicated the shor's case of death payments, we're not going to leave the shor around in order to adjudicate the monetary payments. Now, if we didn't need to make an assessment in Beis Din, there would be no problem. We could just adjudicate the case later. But since we're according with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon HaTimni, who requires that we make an assessment, we would need to leave the shor around after already finalizing the deal, finalizing the case of the death that the shor caused, and we're not going to do that in order to adjudicate the monetary payments. So that's why it makes a difference whether we did the dine nefashos first or not. If we do the dine mamunos of the shor mu'ad first, then we can go back and do the dine nefashos. That's how a shor mu'ad is different from a shor tam. But if they went ahead first and adjudicated the death case of the shor mu'ad, then we cannot keep the shor around to make an assessment and go back and do the dine mamunos. So that's what Rava found the Rabbanan and the Bei Rav discussing and saying about this case. V'amina lehu ana, but Rava says, I told these Rabbanan who were discussing this case and assumed that it accorded with Rabbi Shimon HaTimni, I told them that afilu tema Rabbi Akiva, that this Brisa could even be authored by Rabbi Akiva, who disagrees with Shimon HaTimni as far as how much of an assessment you need in Beis Din. And how would that work if it's Rabbi Akiva? Because hacha b'mayaskinan kegon shebarach. the case that we're dealing with, where we assume that if you already adjudicated the death case of the shor, you can't go back and adjudicate the mamonos case of the shor, is dealing with a case where the baal din, the person who owns the shor, ran away. And if he ran away, then we're not going to be able to collect the monetary payment. We're not going to be able to adjudicate the case of the monetary payment, even though the shor is dead, or the shor has been sentenced to death. But if the person had not run away, then we'd actually be able to go back and adjudicate the case of mamonos. So ask the Gemara, Ibarach, ki lo danu hu dine nefashos, heichi dainina le dine mamonos, below bailin. If you're assuming that the author of this brisa could even be Rabbi Kiva, and the case is that the baal din, the owner of the shor, ran away, then why does it make a difference whether we've adjudicated the case of the death first or not? The Gemara was assuming that if we adjudicate the case of the monetary payments first, then we could go back and adjudicate the case of the death after that. But the Gemara asks, even if we didn't go ahead and do the dine nefashos case first, how could we possibly adjudicate the monetary case without the bailim? If the bailim ran away, there's no way that we can adjudicate the case. So how can you establish it as being a case where the bailim ran away? So answers the Gemara, the Kabil Sahadi Uvarach. We're dealing with the case where the Bailim accepted witnesses upon himself, and we sort of began the process of adjudicating the case, and then he ran away. So in such a case, if we had already done the Dine Nefashos, we would not go back to do Dine Mamonos. But if we had done Dine Mamonos first, then we can do Dine Nefashos. And don't tell me, the guy ran away, so how can we adjudicate the monetary payments? Because he already accepted witnesses upon himself. So ask the Gemara, though, but sof, mehecha mishtalim, merijya. At the end of the day, if you're assuming that the owner ran away and you first adjudicated the case of the death penalty and now you're going to adjudicate the case of the monetary payment, where are you going to receive payment for the monetary payment for the damages that the shor caused from? If the bailim ran away and the shor is going to be sentenced to death, presumably the only place that you're going to be able to collect the damages caused by the shor is merijya. It's from the rijya, which is like the grazing or the plowing of the ox, that we're going to leave the ox around before we put it to death, and it's going to work, it's going to plow, and in the payment for the plowing that the shor does, you're going to use that payment, that those wages, to pay for the damages. That's going to be the only way that you can collect the damages caused by the shor mu'ad. So if that's the case, the bailim ran away, and the only place from which you can collect the money is from the plowing, then ihachi tam nedanya dina momenos bereisha v'nishtalim bereisha v'hadar nedanya dina nefashos. Why are we assuming by a shor tam, a shor that's unlikely to graze, that we cannot collect the dina momenos at all? We're only going to collect the dina nefashos. Why don't we say that we're first going to adjudicate the case of dina momenos, and we'll collect the money, merijya, from the plowing, from the work that the shor does, and then we'll go back and adjudicate the case of dina nefashos, and we'll presumably put the shor to death. So why should there be such a discrepancy between a shor tam and a shor mu'ad if we're dealing with a case where the bailim ran away and we're collecting the payment for the damages caused by the shor mu'ad from the plowing of the shor? We should do the same for a shor tam. So Amar Rav Mari, Bereder of Kahana, Zos Omeres, Rijya Aliyah Demarehu. Rav Mari, the son of Rav Kahana, says, the fact that we would only pay merijya, we would only pay from the plowing of the shor for a shor mu'ad and not from a shor tam, tells us that the wages earned by the shor plowing must be considered aliyah demara. It must be considered the private possessions of the owner. Because remember, we have a difference when it comes to a shor tam and a shor mu'ad. A shor tam is mishtalim migufo. A shor tam pays for the damages that it caused from its own value, from the value of the ox itself. But a shor mu'ad, the payments for those are made ma'aliyah from the private possessions of the bailim. So if we're assuming that we can only use the Dmei Harisha, we can only use the wages of the plowing of the shor for a shor mu'ad and not for a shor tam, it must be that the plowing of the shor is considered ma'aliyah. Therefore, it's only relevant to be used for the payments of a shor mu'ad. It's not relevant to be used for a shor tam. And that's how we can explain why the Gemara would not let us judge the case of mamonos of the shor tam first and then go back and judge the Dinei Nefashos case of the shor tam. We could only do such a thing by a shor mu'ad. That's essentially that brisa that we ran through at the end of the daf yesterday. Now, let's continue with Ibailahu, the beginning of Tzadi Aleph Amad Aleph. Ibailahu, yesh ome l'nizakin, o ein ome l'nizakin. Gemara wants to know, do we make an assessment for the damages caused to a person and assess whether the strike that caused those damages had enough to damage the person or not? Or do we not say, make such an assessment? Mi amrinan lekatalahu damdinan, b'hachi nafka neshama, b'hachi lo nafka neshama, aval nizakin koldehu, o dilma lo shna. do we say that we only make an assessment when it comes to somebody who caused another person to die? Because we assess whether the strike was large enough, was strong enough to kill the person or not. But by nezakin, we assume that any strike, any potential damager has the ability to damage a person and we don't need to assess it. Or perhaps it doesn't make a difference. Perhaps we have to assess both by killing and by damages. So says the Gemara Tashma. We have our first potential proof to this question. We have a brisa which says, "Ma bor sheyesh bo kdei laham min asar tefachim, av kol sheyesh bo kdei laham min asar tefachim." The Gemara had told us, we've seen this before, that just like a boar needs to have 10 tefachim in order to be able to kill, and if it does, then it's considered liable to damage, and a person would be responsible for that. So too, anything which has 10 tefachim, which has the ability to kill somebody. But if you're dealing with a boar, let's say, which is less than 10 tefachim, and an ox or a donkey falls into the boar, into the pit, and dies, pater, then you'd be exempt from the damages caused to the shore, to the chamor, because the boar did not have asar tefachim. It wasn't 10 tefachim deep, and presumably it did not have enough size or airspace in order to kill. Now, huzak bo chayav. If the ox or the donkey fell into the boar and became injured, then you would be obligated, even if the boar is less than 10 tefachim. So ask the Gemara, my lav mi mata lemala kachashiv, v'hachi kamar. Shouldn't we assume that this case that the Gemara is discussing, when we say ha'yipchutim asar tefachim, when it's less than 10 tefachim, is really going all the way from the bottom. It's basically going from zero. And saying, and the Gemara is going to explain, v'hachi kamar, mi tefach ba'ar asara mita leka nizakin ika. What the Gemara means to say is, Hayipchutim Asar Tefachim, if there's anywhere between one tefach all the way up to 10 tefachim, but just short of 10 tefachim, then the boar does not have the ability to kill. It does have the ability to cause damage. And what would that mean? Alma l'nizakin koldehu. Shma mina ein omdin l'nizakin. If the Gemara is really saying that anywhere between one tefach up to 10 tefachim has the ability to cause damage, that would mean that any amount has the ability to cause damage and to be penalized for causing damage. And that would mean that we don't have to make an assessment when it comes to nezakin, whether the boar or whether any other injurer has the ability to injure somebody, because even if it's just one tefach, we assume it does have the ability to injure and you'd be obligated. So that seems to answer our question. We do not make an assessment for nezakin. So the Gemara rejects that. The Gemara says, lo. Mimala lamata kachashiv. You thought it was going from one tefach all the way up to 10 tefachim, but it's really going the opposite way. It's going from 10 tefachim all the way down. V'hachi kamar. Asara mita ika. If you're dealing with a boar that has 10 tefachim, then it has the ability to cause death. But pachom asara purta, if it's just below 10 tefachim, then nizakin isa, misa leka. If it's just below 10 tefachim, then we assume it has the ability to cause damage, but it does not have the ability to cause death. And really, I could tell you, if it's true that we're only assuming if it's just below 10 tefachim, it for sure has the ability to injure. But if it's way below 10 tefachim, if it's only a tefach, maybe it doesn't have the ability to injure, and we'd have to assess that. And based on this brisa, and based on this reading, I could tell you that maybe we really do require an assessment when it comes to damages, and we'd have to assess every individual case, every individual thing, to see if it has enough of an ability to injure, or not. So that's the first brisa, the first proof that the Gemara tries to bring. It tries to prove that we do make an assessment for nezakin. Sorry, that we do not make an assessment for nezakin, and ultimately it proves that it is inconclusive. We cannot know either way from this case. So now says the Gemara another potential proof. Tashima, hiko al eino v'simeo, al ozno v'chersho, eved yotze behen l'cheros. Let's say a master hits his servant either on his eye and causes him to go blind, or on his ear and causes him to go deaf. So the Gemara assumes that in such a case, an Eved would go free. This would be considered like one of the limbs that if a person injures or completely removes, yes, the slave would go free. And we assume that just blinding the person, even if you don't take out his eye, or just deafening the person, even if you don't cut off his ear, is enough to send the Eved l'cheiros, is enough to send the Eved free. Keneged eino v'eino roe, keneged ozno v'eino shomea, ein Eved yotze behen l'cheiros. But if the master strikes the servant near his eye, and then as a result he cannot see, but he didn't hit him exactly on the eye, or he hits him around the ear but not directly on the ear, and as a result the Eved cannot hear anymore, that is not a case where an Eved would be Yotze L'Cheiros. That's not a case where an Eved would go free, because it's not assumed that the direct damage was caused by the master.
That's not how Rashi interprets, right? What does Rashi say? Keneged Eino? Higo Bakosel Keneged Eino.
Higo Bakotel Keneged Eino Shalza.
In other words, he had his ear, he had his eye on one side of the wall, and he struck the other side of the wall.
Or he struck struck a wall, and the guy freaked out.
But then how is it connected, you know, if the guy just freaked out?
Near his eye. I'm just pointing out Rashi.
No, 100%. I'm not even 100% sure what Rashi means, though.
Keneged is opposite.
Right.
So he has his eye here, or ear, and the guy struck the other side of the wall. He never came into direct contact with the limb, and he became deaf or blind.
Is it also possible, though, that the guy is standing against the wall and you punch him right next to his face on that same wall, on the same side? Is that not also connected? Keneged just means the opposite in accordance with... I'm not sure.
I think if you laid hands on him and he lost an eye, I think you'd be...
Right, so I'm saying, let's say you don't directly lay hands on him, but he's standing, you know, right here, and you come right here. So you're right next to, let's say, this eye on this side of the wall.
So you didn't come with contact? You just frightened him? And he went blind from fear, from fright?
Yeah, let's say...
That would be Potter. Yeah, that would be
Potter. Right, that would be Potter. So in all of these cases, but I assume as long as you're not directly hitting the eye...
This, I think, is the...
Is the posh. Yeah, okay, I hear that, 100%. Fine, so the Gemara is assuming that an Eved would not be Yotze L'Cheiros in such a case. So what does this Braisa tell us? My time. Why is it that in the second case, the Eved doesn't go free? If you just hit him against the wall, let's say... opposite the eye or opposite the ear, he would not go free. Isn't that because we need to make an assessment whether or not you really have the ability to damage the servant in such a way? And that would prove that there is an umdanel in Nezakin. We do need to make an assessment when it comes to Nezakin. So now this proof is going the opposite way of the first proof. Seemingly we can conclude that you do need an assessment for Nezakin. So answers the Gemara, lo, mishum da amrinan, who, and the Bach adds in the word nihu, da avis nafshe. The reason the Eved doesn't go free if you just hit him against the wall, near the ear, near the eye, opposite the ear, opposite the eye, is because we assume that he caused the damage to himself. He became afraid and indirectly or directly caused the damage to himself, but it was not really you who caused the damage. And that's like a Braisa. Kedetanya hamavet et chavero, pater midine adam b'chayav b'dine shamayim. The Braisa says that if you scare your friend, you're exempt from punishment in this world, you're exempt from punishment in the human court, but you are obligated in the heavenly court. Ketzad, what's the case of causing a person fear that'll cause them injury? Taka be'ozno v'chersha pater. If you hit him, again, Rashi has two days what taka means. Either it means that you hit, let's see Rashi just directly. Where is it? I've seen it before.
Yeah, in this case, it might mean that he actually, that he just shouted into his ear.
Right, I think Rashi quotes both theos. I thought yesterday, now I don't see it.
If he boxed his ear, he would be chayav.
Right, so I think Rashi had two days here, now I'm not seeing
Maybe
it.
Maybe earlier there were 2 days. When this first came up in the Mishnah, I think. It came up in the Mishnah.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, exactly. The first Rashi in the Mishnah, on Sadiya Man Aleph, Hatukei Alechavero, Hikau Al Ozno, either you hit him in the ear, or lishnachrin, it's okay, I'm Amish, you blow into his ear. So let's go with the second parish, I guess, that you blow into his ear. If you blow into his ear and cause him to die, then you'd be, cause him to go deaf, rather, you'd be pater. Yeah. But achzo betako beozno bechersho chayev. If you actually grab onto him, and directly, again, let's say blow, but even if you were to strike him in the ear, if you were to grab him by force and try to injure him, and through that you cause him to go deaf, then you'd be obligated. So the first case in the Braisa where you're tokea be'ozno and you cause him to go deaf, you're pater, that's what we're assuming is happening with the Eved, that he's causing fright to himself, and that's what's causing him to go deaf, and that's why you're not directly obligated and he doesn't go free. It's not because we need to make an assessment, it's just because who the Aved and Afshe. So you can't prove from this Braisa that we need to make an assessment by Nezakin, just like we need to by death. It's not necessarily conclusive. So says the Gemara now, Toshima, we have another potential proof. Chamisha dvarim, omdin oto, benotnim lo miyad. The five payments that you have to pay for injuring your friend, we assess right away, and we give the person right away. And ribui v'sheves ad shiyisrape. The money that you have to give him for medical bills, and also the money that you have to give him for workers' compensation, for him being out of work, you give him those payments all the way until he becomes healed, until he recovers from his injury. Amduhu v'haya misnavne v'holech, ain't known in low alakamosha amduhu. Let's say they make an assessment for how much he needs for compensation for being out of work and also for his medical bills. And then the person happens to get worse. He happens to deteriorate in his physical condition and presumably he's going to have more expenses than they assumed at first. We don't require you to pay more. We just require you to pay what we originally assessed that you would need to pay. Amduhu vihivri non in lo kol masha amduhu. And in the alternative case, let's say they assess how much he needs, but then he has a miraculous recovery and he recovers more quickly than they were expecting, you wouldn't decrease the amount that you have to give him. You still have to give him everything they assessed you to have to give him to begin with. So Shema Mina, Yesh Omei L'Nizakin. And that would prove that there is an assessment that we have to make for Nizakin. Because the Gemara said very clearly that for the five payments that you have to make, we make an assessment. And for the Ribui and Shevet, we also make an assessment. And it doesn't matter if you get better or you get worse after that, you have to pay the exact amount that was assessed. So clearly, we see that you need to make an assessment for Nizakin. So the Gemara says, no, this isn't a good proof. Because Lemema Gabra Kama Likotzer, I have the Girsa Miha, but it's really supposed to be read without the Yud as Meha. So Lemeimad Gavra Kamali Kotzer Mehamaka Kamalome Kotzer Lo Kami Bayalan Devada Yamdina. Says the Gemara, to assess how sick a person is going to get from this injury, that's not even a question. It's obvious that you're going to have to assess how sick the person would get from this injury. And so we weren't wondering about that. When the Braisa says that you need to make an assessment here, it's clearly assuming to assess how injured the person will be. And that was never a Shaila, that we never weren't sure whether you'd have to assess or not. Ki Kami Bayalan. What we're really wondering is just whether you have to assess the object to see if the object that was used to cause damage, let's say a stone or a pit or anything like that, to assess whether it has the ability to cause damage or not. That's really our question. So this brisa that you're bringing me to prove that you have to assess the person to see how damaged he is and how much money he needs to pay for his expenses, that is not a good proof. That is not really our question. So ask the Gemara, Mai, what is the answer to this question, whether you need to assess the object to see if it has the ability to cause damage or not? Tashima. So we have another potential proof. Shimon Atimni Omer, Ma Egrof Miyuchad Shemaser Le'eda Ule'edim, Avkol Miyuchad Shemaser Le'eda Ule'edim. The Braisa again quotes the opinion of Shimon Atimni, which is what we began with, that just like a fist or just like the strike that's used to damage the person has to be Maser Le'eda Ule'edim, the witnesses and the congregation, the people, have to be able to assess that it is able to cause damage, so too anything which can be assessed to be able to cause damage. So that would prove very clearly, Shema Mina, Yesh Omen, the Nizakin, that would prove very clearly that we do need to make an assessment, whether the object, whether the Cheftza, has the ability to cause damage, Shema Mina, so that is our conclusive proof. It's interesting, the Gemara began with the discussion of Shimon HaTimni, and if it was such a good proof, presumably the Gemara could have brought it right away, but it took the Gemara a few different potential proofs, all of which were dismissed, to prove the question, until we came back to Shimon HaTimni. Yeah, I don't think we passed on like Shimon HaTimni.
What is that Zion?
What is that Zion? That's a good question. In my experience, the Amish Ben Ner Mitzvah is not always reliable. Meaning, sometimes it's pointing you to the place where the machlokas is paskin, but it won't always be the opinion that it shows you. Most of the time, it is reliable, but it's not always. So I would definitely look into it more. It could be that the Rambam there does paskin like Shimon HaTimni. Generally, I would think that we do not paskin like Shimon HaTimni. So you'd have to look into that to clarify.
It would seem that the testimony of the witnesses should be sufficient without any further assessment.
Right.
The witnesses say he used a rock to kill him or to hurt him, then he used a rock to hurt him.
Yeah. So yeah, we'd have to look up that citation just to make sure.
Because in the cross-examination of the witness, the court would anyway ask him how big was the rock and how heavy was the rock. You know, it would be clear that, or not clear that they were telling the truth.
Right. Yeah, so again, not God forbid to take away from the Amish Bar Mitzvah. Obviously, he did incredible work, but sometimes the citation is not exactly what you think it's going to be. You have to look it up really to see further. Okay, so let's continue. Omar, Amdu v'hivri, nomen lo kol masha amdu. We had said in the Braisa, the second to last proof that we tried to bring, which ultimately was inconclusive, that if they assess how much the person needs for medical bills and for being out of work, and then he becomes healthy more quickly, you still have to pay him everything that they assessed him to receive. So Messiah Le Rava, the Amar Rava, Haiman Da Amdu Le Kule Yoma, the Itpach Le Palga De Yoma, Bekavir Avita Yavin Le De Kule Yoma. That supports Rava, because Rava said if there was a person who they assessed would be injured for an entire day, and then he became healed halfway through the day, and he worked for the second half of the day, we still give him the worker's compensation for the entire day. Because min shamayahu derachmi alei, that which he became healed halfway through the day and quickly recovered and was able to work, we assume that that's heavenly mercy, that mishamayim, they had mercy on him and he was able to recover and get back to work, but we still have to pay him the entire payment.
What kind of price is that? In other words, for one day, you could say, okay, people don't usually go out and work for half a day. But, you know, if you say he's going to take 2 weeks and he gets better in 1 week, maybe there is a difference.
Right. Well, that's interesting. The Gemara...
They might be worried about the respect for the court. If they take the court's judgment and then adjust it later on, it might be zila de bedina. You know, people might
right.
People might mock the court that they're not competent and they don't know what they're doing. So I think they left the judgment as is, regardless.
Right.
You're reading too much Trump.
But.
What?
Mocking the courts? You've been reading too much.
Yeah, I'm watching too much news.
No, certainly we do have that. Do we have something on the Zoom? Certainly we do have that principle that Moshe is mentioning, that we're concerned about Zila de Beidina, so we don't want the court to look like a joke if we reverse the penalty. But I would also just respond to Rudy directly. I think that I hear what you're saying about why it's not a good proof, but the way I see it, the case that's more expansive, meaning if it's a two-week process and you recover after 1 week, that Rava, who's only talking about one day, would not be such a good proof to that. And that's really your question. Rava is not a good proof to that. But the Gemara brought it the other way. The Gemara said if you assume by 2 weeks that if a person recovers after 1 week, you still have to give them the whole 2 weeks, that supports Rava, who only said it by one day. So I think in that direction, it is a good proof. Because maybe Rava's questionable. That Rava says this for one day, that's a little bit questionable. And yet we have a Braisa which says that you can do it even over a longer period of time. So certainly that supports Rava. Now whether Rava supports the Braisa, that's really the point that you're making, and that might not be such a good proof. The Gemara doesn't bring it in that direction. Rava is not being used to support Mar. Mar is just being used to support Rava, right? So I think that does make sense. If it would be questionable whether if a person recovers after half a day, we could give them the payment. And we have a Braisa which says even if it's a longer period you can do that, then certainly that would support a shorter duration of time. Whether you can go from a shorter duration of time to a longer duration of time, maybe not such a good proof, but the Gemara didn't use that as a proof, so potentially that's also an answer. I don't know if that makes sense. Fine, let's continue. Rakak v'igia b'harok. So the Gemara had discussed, the Mishnah rather, had discussed various cases where you embarrass a person, you cause damage to a person. So one of the cases was if you spit on the person. So Amar Papa, lo shanu elabo. Rav Papa says this then only applies if the spit actually hits the person directly. Aval b'bigdo, lo. But if the spit hits the person's clothing, then you would not be obligated to pay. So ask the Gemara, v'nehavi kibiyesh bedvarim. I don't understand. If the spit hits the clothing, why should you not have to pay? That should be just like a case where you embarrass a person through the words that you say. And we're assuming that if you embarrass a person through words, you would also have to pay. So why should you not have to pay if you spit on the person's clothing? Answers the Gemara, amri b'ma'arava mishmeder b'yosi baravin zos ameres b'yisho bedvarim pater miklim. The fact that we're saying that if you spit on a person's clothing, you're exempt, and we would assume that that should be the same as embarrassing the person through words, that would show us also that if you embarrass a person through words, you do not have to pay at all. You're pater miklum. So the Gemara's original assumption that you should have to pay if you embarrass a person through words was clearly wrong. You do not have to pay in such a case.
Even though we say akimus fosov habimaisa.
But that's when it comes to something which is more concrete, I guess. In cases of Adis or whatever it is, Akima.
So she doesn't get the $3 million?
You're talking about Moshe Shemra, right? That's where we have Akima Svasa.
Akima Svasa, no. Akima Svasa, we have.
Moshe
Shemra is going to tell you,
No, 100%, but we have Akima Svasa have it being considered a Maisa, I think, in many different contexts. One of them, I think it comes with Moshe Shemra. I could be wrong about that, but. You would have to do a maisa which is recognized, and then the question is, what's the maisa that you did? Meaning, you're doing a speech, you're doing a dibur, an akim etzvasav, which the Torah recognizes, and then the question is, well, what's the maisa that you did? So the maisa that you did is opening your mouth. But we're saying that bishul bedvarim is not considered significant. You wouldn't be obligated for that. If you would be obligated, so then we could say the opening of your mouth is considered a maisa. But because you're not obligated for that, even though it is a maisa, it's a maisa shein b'kach klum, it's a maisa shel ma b'kach, you're not doing anything.
I think it comes up in the question of whether it's grama or not. Whether words are considered grammar and you should be potter. So the Gemara says, no, akim is supposed to have a maisa.
Right.
It's actually an act.
Right. But that's assuming that there is a direct damage, meaning the question is, there's clearly some damage, and the shaila is it grama, is it indirect, or is it not? But here we're saying there isn't even a damage, because bisho b'dvarim is pater miklum. So even though you could tell me it's a maisa shel mabekach, you're not doing anything which is halachically significant. At least according to the Gemara. Maybe violating Lashon Hara or whatever it is, but eh. Anything which you would say to the person is not an issue of Lashon Hara.
And yet we say,
that's true. Maybe that's a different issue.
that's Bisha B'dvarim.
But Pater Miklum, you're Pater in this world.
You're Pater from Beznit. You know, right. Beznit can't act now.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Hakolafi Kvodo, Tanakama, had said that when it comes to embarrassment, everything goes based on the person's honor, based on the embarrassment that would be caused to the person. So, Yibayelihu, Tanakama, Lekula Kamar, or Lechumra Kamar? When Tanakama says this, is he saying it as a leniency, as a kula, or is he saying it as a stringency, as a chumra? Lekula Kamar, Deika Ani, Delobayle Mishkal Kulehai, is he saying it as a leniency that there are some poor people who aren't so embarrassed and they don't need to receive such a large payment for embarrassment? Or is Tanakama saying it as a stringency that there are some rich people that you would have to pay even more for the embarrassment that you caused them? So Tashima, the Brisa says, we can learn what Tanakama is trying to say from Rabbi Akiva, who comes right after Tanakama in the Mishnah. From the fact that Rabbi Akiva says, even the poor people in the nation of Israel, we view them as if they're free people who have lost all their property because they are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So Shema Mina, Tanakama, Lekula Kamar, Shema Mina. That's a conclusive proof that Tanakama was saying it as a leniency. Tanakama was saying that you may have poor people that you would not have to pay so much. And Rabbi Akiva comes along and says you have to view poor people in the highest way. You have to view them as free people who just lost some of their property because they're all the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and you would have to pay the poor people more. Thus, it's clear that Tanakhama was saying you would only have to pay the poor people a smaller amount. The Mishnah had a case where a person took off the head covering, uncovered the hair of a woman, and Rabbi Akiva wanted him to pay for the embarrassment caused to the woman. And he said, give me some time. And what he essentially proved was that the woman doesn't care so much about her own snias, about her own hair covering, so he shouldn't be obligated to pay at all. So ask the Gemara, Umi Avinan's man. Rabbi Akiva gave this guy time to prove whether he should have to pay or not. But do we really give people time to assess whether or not they're going to have to pay or whether, you know, they can get out of the payment? We should require them to pay right away. How do I know that? Bahama Rabbi Chanina, or I have a different gear, so Bahama Rabbi Yochanan, ain't notin's man l'chavalos. We don't give time for damages caused to another person. We just require the person to pay right away. So why would Rabbi Akiva give this person time before requiring him to pay? So answers the Gemara, ki lo yavinan izman l'chavala d'chasre mamona. Avalabosha d'lochasre mamona yavinan. We only don't give a person time to pay when it comes to an injury that causes the person to lose out on their inherent value. But when it comes to embarrassment, where you're not causing the person direct financial loss, you just cause them embarrassment, and that's something you have to pay for, then we could give them time, and that's why Rabbi Akiva gave this man in the Mishnah time. Now, this person basically waited until this woman would be guarding her courtyard, and then he came and he spilled a bunch of oil, and the woman basically uncovered her hair and started trying to soak up all the oil.
Why wouldn't it be a riot from a courtyard? Isn't a courtyard semi-private property?
Semi-private, right, but I guess it's public enough that B'nos Yisrael should not be going out with their hair uncovered. The Gemara is assuming that that's enough to show, that the Mishnah really was assuming that's enough to show that the woman doesn't care about her own sneas. So it says the Gemara, V'hatanya, Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, Tzalalta b'mayim adirim, ve'alita cheres b'yadecha, Adam rashay l'chavel be'atmo. So we have another brisa which seems to differ from the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that Rabbi Akiva holds that even though a person is not allowed to injure himself, you still have to pay for the damages caused to this person by embarrassing her. But the brisa says that Rabbi Akiva says, it's interesting, it's sort of borrowing the lashon from Az Yashir, that you went diving essentially in deep waters, and all you were able to pick up from diving, all you were able to pick up from what's underneath the sea,
deep sea diving,
is just a small piece of an earthenware vessel. Meaning, this is not a good proof, this is not a good way to get yourself out of payment in this case, because a person is allowed to injure themselves. So, Amarava lo kasha, kan bechavala, kan beboshes. The contradiction between the Bryce and the Mishnah, the Mishnah said you can injure yourself, and the Braisa says you can, is whether you're dealing with direct damages or just with embarrassment. You're not allowed to directly damage yourself, but you are allowed to embarrass yourself. Ask the Gemara, that doesn't make sense. But Masnisim v'boshesu v'katani hachova ba'atzmo afal pisheinu rashai pater. The Mishnah was talking about a case of embarrassment, and nonetheless it said that you're not allowed to injure yourself. So how could you tell me the Braisa of Rabbi Akiva, which says you can injure yourself, is talking about embarrassment? The Mishnah was talking about embarrassment and said you couldn't. So hachi kamerle. What Rabbi Akiva meant to say in the Mishnah was not that you're not allowed to injure yourself even when it comes to embarrassment. What Rabbi Akiva was saying was, even by embarrassment, where a person is allowed to embarrass themselves, you cannot embarrass themselves, and you have to pay for the embarrassment you caused them. And even injuries, which a person is not allowed to cause themselves, and therefore you might think that you shouldn't have to pay either, no, nonetheless, acherim shechav lebo chayavin, if you injured the person, you'd be obligated to pay for that. So ask the Gemara, v'ein adam rashai l'chavav v'atzmo, is a person not allowed to injure themselves? V'atanya yachol nishba lahara v'atzmo v'lo hera yepater. We have a brisa which says, you might think that if a person makes an oath to do harm to themselves, and they don't harm themselves, that they should be pater, because they swore to do harm for themselves, and they didn't do it, so they violated the oath. But maybe you're not allowed to swear to harm yourself, because you can't cause harm to yourself. And therefore, even if you don't fulfill your oath, you should be pater. So Talmud Lomar, lahara o lehativ, ma hatava rishus, af hara rishus. But we have a pasuk which says that the oath that you make can either be to do good to yourself, or to do bad for yourself. And the Gemara assumes that just like doing good to yourself is something you're allowed to do, so too doing something bad to yourself is something that you're allowed to do. And therefore, avi nishba lahara ba'atzmo velohera, I can include a person who made an oath to do harm to himself and did not do the harm to themselves, that they're obligated for violating their oath. But what you see clearly from this brisa is that a person is allowed to harm themselves. Isn't so this is akasha.
In the case of masnal mashkos of
Torah. The Braisa is seemingly assuming it's not Masna Amashikot the Torah. Because Mehechatesi, where does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed to injure yourself? So we're going to have to get to that. But the Gemara here, and that's why this Braisa is being used as a support to show that you can injure yourself, is assuming it's not Masna Amashikot the Torah at all, because you have permission to injure yourself. So say answers the Gemara, Amr Shmuel, Be'eshev Betainis. This case is different. We're not talking, and this may answer your question also, We're not talking about a case where you're really harming yourself. We're just talking about a case where you're making an oath that you're going to sit in a fast all day. So if you make an oath that you're going to sit in a fast, and then you don't sit in a fast, that would be considered something bad that you were going to do to yourself. You were going to starve yourself. You're going to fast at least for a little bit. And if you don't do that, you'd be obligated for violating your oath. The Gemara says that doesn't make any sense. The kavasa gabi haras acherim la hashivam betainis. We're going to assume that the cases, the Braisa, will be parallel. And the Braisa also spoke about doing bad to other people. And if the case of doing bad to yourself is talking about sitting in a fast, that would mean doing bad to other people is also talking about sitting in a fast. But and the Braisa assumed that you're not allowed to make an oath to do that. If you violate such an oath, you wouldn't be obligated because you can't cause other people you can't cause other people to do bad to themselves, or you can't make an oath to do bad to other people. So ask the Gemara, Acherim imosiv lehu b'ta'anisa? Can you really cause other people to be in a fast? So how can you tell me the case of causing harm to yourself is about fasting? That would mean that the case of causing harm to other people is also about fasting, but you can't make other people fast. The Gemara says, yeah, you can. In the mahadik lehu ba'androna, the case of causing other people to fast would be you lock them in a room where they wouldn't have food. You clearly can cause people to fast. And if we assume that if you make an oath to do that, and you do not do that, you would be exempt because you're not allowed to cause harm to other people. So, at the end of the day, this brisa is not a proof that you're allowed to injure yourself, because maybe all it's talking about is fasting. So now we have another proof. But the brisa says, you misunderstood that last proof, because we have a brisa which says, what do we mean when we're talking about injuring other people? We're talking about making an oath to hit a person. You say, I am going to hit this person, or I am going to injure his brain. So clearly, the hara that you would be doing to other people is real hara, is real damage, real injury, hitting them or causing damage to them. And therefore, the injury that you'd be causing yourself, the harm that you'd be causing yourself, also must be real damage. And therefore, this brisa, which said that if you make an oath to injure yourself and you don't, you would be obligated, clearly assumes that you can injure yourself. So says the Gemara El Tznahi. Really, it's a machlokas tanaim. The ikal manda amar ein and rasha lechabo ba'atmo. There is a manda amar which says that a person is not allowed to injure themselves. The ikal manda amar adam rasha lechabo ba'atmo. And there's another manda amar which says that a person can injure themselves. So man tana de shamis le damar ein and rasha lechabo ba'atmo. Who is the author? Who is the tana who holds that a person is not allowed to injure themselves? Ile mahay tana who the tanya ve'achad imchem le'nashot teichem edrosh. If you think it's the author of the following brisa, on which quotes the pasuk from Parshas Noach, that I will seek out your blood, the blood that you caused. Rabbi Lazar Omer miyad nafshuteichem edrosh edimchem, and Rabbi Lazar interprets that to mean that Hashem will come out, will come and seek out the blood that we cause to ourselves. Let's say v'dilma katala shayni. The Gemara says maybe that's not a good proof that you are not allowed to injure yourself, because maybe that's talking about killing somebody, and maybe God holds you responsible for that. But that does not automatically mean that he holds you responsible for injuring yourself. Maybe for injuring yourself, you would not be obligated. Ella, hai tana. Rather, it must be this tana who holds that you're not allowed to injure yourself. Titania, makaran ala meis, velo midarche haimor. The Brisa says that you're allowed to rip your clothing for a dead person, and that's not considered to be the way of the non-Jewish nations. Amr belazer, shamati shamakarea ala meit, yoter midai, loke mishon baltashkis, or perhaps the girsa should be over mishon baltashkis, the kol shekein gufo. Rabbi Lazar says, I heard that if you tear clothing over a mace, you know, excessively, that you would either be flogged for Baal Tashchis, or you would at least violate the Isser of Baal Tashchis. And all the more so if you rip your own body or you injure your own body, that would be problematic. That would be a violation of Baal Tashchis, of not being wasteful with your own body. So seemingly that would be a proof of a Tana who holds that you're not allowed to injure yourself. But the Gemara says, no, but Dilma Begadim Shani, the Pseida, the Lohadarhu. Maybe that's not such a good kol shekein. The Gemara was assuming we can extrapolate from Rabbi Lazar, who spoke about clothing, to your body. But maybe there's more of an issue of damaging clothing, because clothing are different in that it's a damage which cannot return. It cannot come back. You can't fix the garment after it's broken. Ki ha de Rabbi Yochanan kari lamane mechabdusa. We know that Rabbi Yochanan called his clothing mechabdusa. He called his clothing the thing that honors him. The Rav Chisda karhava misagi b'nei hizmi b'higi. Rav Chisda, when he would walk amongst thorns, midli lehu lemane, he would raise up his garments. Imagine he had a long cloak which was covering his legs, and he would lift up his garment when he was walking through thorns to make sure that the cloak wouldn't become torn, and rather instead his legs would become torn and cut. Amar zem ala arucha v'zeh inu ala arucha, because he would say, if my legs get cut, at least they'll heal, at least they'll scab, and next thing you know, it'll be healed, it'll come back. But the garments, if the garments rip, there's no way to fix them, there's no way for those to be repaired. So maybe there's more of a problem of Baal Tashchis when it comes to clothing, but there's not going to be a problem of Baal Tashchis of causing injury to yourself, and thus we don't have a Tana who holds that you're not allowed to injure yourself. Ella says the Gemara, hi Tanahu. Really, the Tana who holds that you can't injure yourself must be the following Tana. Titania, Amr Belazar Akapar Biribi, or Belazar Akapar Biribi says, Ma Tamalomar Bechiperala Mesher Chatala Nafesh. What does the Pasuk mean when it says that the Nazir has to atone for himself for sinning Al Hanefesh, literally on the soul? Ask the Gemara, Bechbi Ezen Nefesh Chatazeh. What soul did this person sin with? What soul did this person, let's say, injure? Ella shetzir atzmo minayayin. What this person, what the Nazir needs kapara for, is the fact that he held back, he refrained from drinking wine. V'alo dvarim kal v'chomer, u'mazesh lo tzir atzmo ela minayayin nikra chote. And you can learn, basically, based on a logical inference, based on a kal v'chomer, that if the Nazir needs kapara, the Nazir needs atonement, when all he did was refrain from drinking wine, and nonetheless, he's called a chote, nikra chote, I mean, he's called a sinner, ha'mitzar atzmo mikol davar alachas kama v'kama. Somebody who refrains from partaking in any physical matter, all the more so, is considered a sinner. And thus we show that a person who causes harm to themselves by being metzayir atzmo minayayin, by refraining from drinking wine, is considered a sinner, and you are clearly not allowed to be chobel be'atzmo. Now another case that the Mishnah had mentioned was hakotzeitz netiyotav. If a person damages the plants of another person. So Tani Rabba Bar Rachana Kamei de Rav. Rabba Bar Rachana taught in front of Rav that if a person says, Shori Haragta, Nitiotai Katsatsta, let's say a person comes to his friend and says, you killed my ox, or you uprooted my plants. And then the person responds and says, Ata Amartali Lahorgo, Ata Amartali Lakotsito. The person responds and said, you told me to kill your ox, or you told me to uproot your plants. So we would assume in such a case, Pater. We would assume that the person who caused the damage, either who killed the ox or who uprooted the plants, would be exempt because we assume the person actually told him to do that. So ask the Gemara, Amar Le, Im Kein Lo Shavakta Chaya L'Biryasa Kol Kemine. If you're going to assume that if a person just says, you told me to kill your ox, or you told me to uproot your plants, that you're exempt, then you're not going to let people live. People basically won't be able to have private possessions because people will just be able to go around and cause damage to them, just kill the ox, uproot the plants, and they'll be completely exempt. They'll just say, you're the one who told me to do it. So how could you possibly say that? How could that be a tenable position? So Amar Le Asamye, right? So therefore, Rabba Bar Bar Chana, who taught the statement in front of Rav, and Rav questioned it. He said, maybe I should stop teaching this. Maybe I should delete it. Maybe I should remove this teaching. So Amar Le Lo, Tetargem Mas Nisecha. Rav responded, you don't need to stop teaching this. You just need to translate it. You just need to explain it better. That we're dealing Bishor Ha'omed Lahariga, Uve'ilan Ha'omed Lekzitza. You'd only be exempt if you say that the person told you to kill his ox, or that the person told you to uproot his plants, if you're dealing with the shor, which is has been sentenced to death and which is destined to die, or you're dealing with a tree which is destined to be uprooted. In such a case, if the person told you to do it, you'd be exempt, but otherwise not.
Wouldn't he be exempt even if the person didn't tell him to do it?
Wouldn't he be, why?
If you killed a shor niskel, you're not chayv anything. Kill a shor.
So not necessarily. I think that's the Gemara's next question. Ihachi mai katayin lei. If that's true, then why would the person be upset? Shori harakta, nitiotai katzatzta. Like Moshe is saying, in such a case, you should be patur no matter what, because the shor was sentenced to death, and therefore, what is the claim of the person who's saying, how could you kill my ox? How could you uproot my plants? These were destined to happen. Why is he upset? Because he would respond and say that I wanted to do this mitzvah on my own. I wanted to be the one to put the shor to death, to kill the shor, to uproot the plants, and I didn't want you to do it. Even though he says that he told him to do it. Now the question is, if the person wanted to do it himself, then even if he told you, why are you putter? So Rashi explains that we assume that the person who says that you told me to kill your shor or you told me to uproot your plants is really telling the truth, that he actually did say that, even though the person is saying, I wanted to do the mitzvah myself, because of the circumstances, we assume that he was actually told to kill the shor, he was actually told to uproot the plants, and thus he's not held responsible. Titania v'shafach v'chisa misha shafach yechasa. Because we have a brisa. How do we know that this principle of I wanted to do the mitzvah myself is a real principle, is a real claim? Because we have a brisa which talks about the mitzvah of kisu adam, of covering the blood after you shecht an animal. And it says that the person who spilled the blood, the person who shechted the animal, should cover it. Umaisa be'echad sheshacha. There was once a case where a person shechted an animal, cut him chaveiro v'kisa, and his friend undercut him and covered the blood for him, before him. V'chiva Rebbim Gamliel liten lo asar zehuvim. Rebbim Gamliel required the friend who went ahead and did the kisu hadam to pay the friend 10 pieces of gold, 10 coins, as payment for basically taking his mitzvah. We assume that a person would prefer to do the mitzvah himself, and thus the person who had the ox which was sentenced to death or the plants which need to be uprooted wanted to do it himself because he wanted to do the mitzvah, which we see is a real principle based on Rav Gamliel requiring the friend who undercut the person and took his mitzvah of Kisui Adam to pay him 10 pieces of gold. I guess we'll hold it over here. Asher Kachar.